Welcome to MGO Podcast 12.18. If you got whiplash from the last two basketball games, don't call Richard Ho. He doesn't do that kind of law. Record this podcast weekly, which often means that we're talking about two different basketball games. And I would like to wager that in the history of our podcast, we have never had to deal with two games as divergent as the most recent Minnesota and Wisconsin games.
It would be difficult. I certainly cannot pull a back-to-back sequence off the top of my head that felt quite like this turnaround.
No, so, I mean, we always go with the most recent game first, which is unfortunate. So we will start with Minnesota 75, Michigan 57. Obviously, Michigan's worst performance of the year because they haven't lost yet this year, let alone by 57.
Well, but you know before, what we can start with before we start with that?
Sure.
Is our sponsors. We are brought to you by Underground Printing and Bose Store. Get started on your custom apparel order today at undergroundshirts.com. We also have a I Heart Heart shirt up right now if you want to get in on that. Let's also not forget our associate sponsors, Homesure Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, the Residents in Ann Arbor Downtown, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, Information Entropy, and the University of Michigan Alumni Association.
And so when you have a 43-point turnaround from one game to the other, as Michigan and Minnesota did, there's obviously going to be a lot of different reasons. One of them, obviously, is Eli Brooks misses this game, probably Michigan's best on-ball defender for guards, which causes Mike Smith to not come off the floor, I don't think, until Michigan kind of waved the white flag with 2 minutes left. So then Mike Smith doesn't score a point. He does have 10 assists versus 3 turnovers.
They did try some Zeb Jackson in there at one point.
You hit 9 minutes of Zeb Jackson. At one point, Sean D. Brown, after a bravura sequence where he like forces a turnover, hits a three, and then forces a 10-second violation, comes off the floor, and everybody's like, what the hell? And it turns out that Brown had just been putting so much effort in that he needed a blow, and that blow came in the form of Zeb Jackson, who was more or less directly responsible for a 7-0 run that effectively ended the game. So not great. Michigan doesn't have depth. And this happened last year when Livers was out. So Michigan's performance without Livers was much worse than you'd expect, just losing one guy. And they were able to, you know, endure Austin Davis's absence because they did have a reasonable backup five in Brandon Johns. But, you know, without Eli on this team, Michigan only has one guard, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's a different matter when you're talking about losing one of the two players you have who's really capable of running the offense. So, I mean, especially when, you know, Mike Smith, while the team defense has still been good with him on the floor, it's obviously, you know, better to have Brooks out there. It helps makes better matchups. I mean, Marcus Carr has an inefficient game in this one, but not kind of the disaster that he had in the first game, and at least was breaking down the defense more. And yeah, I wish there was a different way to show that Eli Brooks does a lot of stuff that doesn't necessarily show up in the box score than to have it hit like really hard right in the box score between two games. But this is a really good example of how Brooks is communication on both ends of the floor, his knowledge of the system, and just being a really solid player, you know, that makes a huge difference on a team that basically goes 7.5 deep right now.
Yeah, he wasn't the only thing, but like he was, it was a big thing because how do you shut down Marcus Carr, right? You want to put Eli on him. That's like the way that Michigan did it the first time, and that if you have to put Shondi Brown on him, I think Shondi did an okay job. He's like the wrong size for, you know, a quick small guy like that. But I thought Shondi did a good job. But then you're taking Shondi off of Kalsher, and you know, I mean
that's fine. Gabe Kalsher is not good this year and needs 11 shot equivalents to score 10 points. I mean, like the backcourt was not the problem in terms of the defensive stuff. The team organization on both ends, Liam Robbins scoring 22 points on 14 shots was a huge difference in this game. Dickinson only playing 23 minutes, and while he had a good scoring game, he turns the ball over five times. I mean, we haven't brought up 20 turnovers, and that's the difference in this game. It's 20 friggin' turnovers.
Yeah, I was glad that they had one right at the end. In KenPom time, just so it make it the even 20. It's so much better to talk about 20 turnovers than 19.
And you can forgive Mike Smith having three when he has 10 assists. But, you know, Shondi had zero assists, two turnovers. Livers had two turnovers. And both those guys, I feel, occasionally kind of get a little bit out of their lane when they decide to attack the basket. When, especially in this game, I mean, Shondi goes 2 of 5 from three, but two of his makes from two are like foot on the line corner triples. So he's really essentially 4 of 7 from three and 2 of 5 inside the line. And he was just filling it up. So at some point you're just kind of like, dude, shoot the ball. And Livers did start shooting. The ball goes 3 of 7 from three, which is a good return. So, and then you just kind of have it spread out across the rest of the lineup. So Johns has 1 in 8 minutes. Seb Jackson has 2 in 9 minutes. Like, you know, you go down the rosters of various Big Ten teams, and not many of them are as kind of devoid of potential contributors after their top 6 or 8 guys as Michigan is right now. So, you know, particularly like if you look at Iowa, you know, beyond their starting lineup, they have Patrick McCaffrey, they have Jack Nungi, they have Keegan Murray. Like, they have a lot of guys. They have Joe Toussaint, guys who can do some stuff for you, even if they're not the most efficient guys on the court. And Michigan's bench, like, there's a difference between a guy who's able to absorb some usage and isn't the most efficient guy in the world, and just a kind of a blank spot. And Michigan's able to get away with that, as long as they have everybody healthy,
or as long as the injury isn't to one of the guards. I think they can handle it fine, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean that's what I mean. The best.
So I don't really think, like, I don't think Michigan necessarily has a depth problem. There's if you hit pretty much any Big Ten team in the wrong spot, they're going to get a lot worse. And Michigan took an injury at the exact wrong spot. Other than an injury to Hunter Dickinson, this is the one they can least afford to take. Maybe Franz Wagner. But you know, they have wing depth, they have decent big depth. You know, even Austin Davis is a perfectly suitable backup big against a lot of teams if you play him the right minutes. You know, I think Brandon Johns can be better utilized. And I don't know, I do think that Juwan Howard probably could have played a better combination of lineups to maximize winning this game, but he also seemed to clearly be making a point to Hunter Dickinson at some point, and Dickinson did have 5 turnovers in 23 minutes. So there was probably a good point to be made there. And otherwise, I mean, you talk about the spread out and turnovers. It's hard to really point at any one guy and be like, you didn't play very well other than maybe Dickinson, but he's 4 for 5. I mean, like, you know, he wasn't awful. And it just seemed like a pretty rough confluence of guys having mediocre games and a couple turnovers each, in addition to Michigan missing one of their three most indispensable players.
Yeah, and then Minnesota played a much better game. So even like Eric Curry's coming off the bench and hitting multiple 15-foot face-up jumpers, and you're kind of like, oh, it's one of these games.
Yeah, to the point where he like audaciously takes a couple of threes that are just by no means in his range.
You mentioned the 20 turnovers, Ace, and one thing that kind of jumps out is that 12 of those were steals for Minnesota. So Michigan has been really good about not allowing transition opportunities to even happen, as you mentioned in one of your posts this week. And just 12 open court steals versus 4 for Michigan. And 2 of those come from Franz and lead to buckets. But it, like, that's just, that's a 10 point hill you're building just on those possessions, really? Because those are going to be more effective offensive possessions for Minnesota.
Yeah, there are it was kind of just a death by a thousand cuts game a little bit in terms of, you know, you give up these little open court plays, you have these little breakdowns, a lot of missed three pointers leading to early clock opportunities, just stuff that Minnesota was absolutely not getting in the first game. Then you also have Robbins play, just, you know, going full revenge game mode, as the announcers really love to keep pointing out. And part of that was that he was definitely playing better than Hunter Dickinson. Part of that was also that he was catching, you know, a lot fewer minutes of Hunter Dickinson at times. So Robbins was able to have a really strong output. And but also, you know, part of them pulling away was him going 3 for 3 from beyond the arc. And even if you aren't doing a great job of guarding pick and pops, which Michigan hasn't really, you don't necessarily expect that guy to be a rainmaker from deep suddenly.
No, those were like 3 of their 4 total makes on the afternoon, though, so I can't really point to
out of 18
3-point shooting overall.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. So it is worth mentioning that Minnesota had a brutal game from beyond the arc themselves. Unfortunately, Michigan is not able at all to capitalize on it. And Michigan also goes 7 for 14 from the free throw line, and that's spread out through a few people. Wagner misses a pair at one point. Dickinson goes 1 for 3. It's just, I mean, you get a few minutes of Terrence Williams in there when Jackson isn't going that well, and Shondi Brown picks up his 4th foul, and Howard's kind of looking at his bench like, I'm not sure what to do here. Like,
yeah.
So this is a game that I think you're mostly going to look at as, I mean, as long as Brooks's injury is a short-term thing, which, you know, based on the initial day-to-day foot strain reports, seems like it should be. This is one you're hopefully able to throw out. Like, a loss was going to inevitably come. You didn't expect it to be this ugly, but there's at least a reason for it. And then you also have a bunch of stuff that ended up getting put on film for your team that you can hopefully, you know, sit down and work on in a way where, you know, maybe when you're winning every game by 20, it's harder to get guys to kind of, you know, get the little things in their mind at all times. And this is a game where the little things went poorly. Michigan's had some turnover issues all year, and that really blew the game open this time without Eli.
Yeah, and everybody gets barned eventually. Like, Minnesota's, I think, 10-0 in the barn this year, and, you know, we know it's not the students now who are doing it, so it's just something weird about that stadium. You get in there, and the things just get weird.
Well, I mean, you go back to the Minnesota-Iowa game, and there's a pretty clear explanation for why that was a game, and that's because Brandon Johnson went 8 of 9 from 3. And you look at what happened in this game, and it doesn't, there's not like a single Minnesota player doing something out of his mind that kind of jumps out as an issue. And so it goes back to what Michigan is doing. And Michigan is turning the ball over 20 times in this game, which I saw some stat, like, which is the most they've turned the ball over since some game against a Patsy in the very earliest days of the Beilein regime. So
it was also tied with the Oakland game. So there is that.
I think it was on turnover percentage, which was 28% in this game, which is,
it was high.
High.
Yeah. That's worse than the Oakland game. You also have, I mean, just to sort of encapsulate the crappiness of this game, at that Oakland game, I like referring to the 0 to 100 scale game score on Torvik, just to get a general idea, because it's opponent adjusted. It's easy to figure out. 0 means he played like the worst team in the country. 100 means he played like the best, and 50 means he played like average. Michigan posted a 42 against Oakland and managed to win that game because Oakland is below average. In this game, they posted a 38, and Minnesota's definitely in the top half of the country. And that's all they had to play like to win that game with the way that Michigan played. So, because it was a below average defensive performance by Michigan standards, although still not bad, but even when you adjust the offensive rating to account for Minnesota being better than an average defense nationally, Michigan gets a 90. So that was just a clunker.
A clunker all around. And I think this game kind of emphasizes that when Michigan's looking at next year's roster, it would be really nice to get at least one of Smith or Brooks back just for these kind of situations where, you know, you need to rely on a reduced starting lineup and you need someone off the bench to come in and give you more than, I guess Terrence Williams was the best performance, 3 points, right?
Yeah. I mean, and I'm a Frankie Collins believer, but at the same time, yeah, this game did a pretty good job of showing how important depth is. And if there's a way to, you know, bring one of those guys back, wouldn't mind it one bit.
And it's not like they have a one and done coming in the backcourt next year. Those guys are front court dudes.
Yep. All right. We're going to take a break, come back and talk about the happier occurrence of the week.
. 2021 is finally here, and there's no better way to celebrate the new year than with some new gear. Our local friends at Underground Printing have all your custom apparel needs covered, whether it's breathable polos with your logo or new fleece jackets for your group. UGP works with customers big and small. Choose from their extensive catalog with options for every budget, including premium brands like Nike, Carhartt, Yeti, The North Face, and more. Underground Printing is three convenient Ann Arbor locations, or check them out at undergroundprinting.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to... Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage them with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way. Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
Hey, so I have like insurance and stuff, but I don't really like know what's going on with it.
Yeah, your coverage probably sucks, and you're paying way too much for it. And I know this because I had a guy, his name's Phil Klein. He's actually a Michigan alum and wrestled for Michigan. He looked at my insurance, and he was like, yeah, your coverage sucks, and you're paying a lot more than you need to for it.
I also, like, I hesitate to even mention this, but I do have my insurance from a company that advertises during college football games. Well, and I wish that was not the case.
Well, why don't you just get it from a cool guy who actually like reads MGo blog?
Well, how would I do that? They have a website?
They have one of those too. It's philklineinsurance.com. Can you remember the name Phil Klein?
Sure.
Can you remember insurance?
Yes.
Okay. Use those two together and you will save money on your insurance and you will actually get better coverage on your home and your auto, and they do life too.
All right. So you're telling me if I Google Phil Klein Insurance, this website will come up?
Yes.
Wonders never cease. On the flip side, Michigan demolishes Wisconsin 77-54. Held Wisconsin to 29% two-point shooting. They actually have fewer turnovers than Wisconsin, which is saying something. That was 10-8, and then they go into Minnesota, and that happens. So this is a three-point game about midway through the first half until Michigan goes on a 43-6 run, which, I mean, the Minnesota game that just happened completely flipped all our expectations, but it seemed like in all of these games, there was a point at which Michigan just got locked in on both ends and just shot the lights out and blocked everything. And by the time anyone was able to wake up out of this nightmare, the game was over.
Yeah, I mean, the Wisconsin game, even when you factor the Minnesota game into account, showed that Michigan's best is as good as anyone's best in the country. I mean, Wisconsin is a legitimate top 10 team. They are a team that starts five seniors. You know, nobody got into foul trouble for them, except kind of Micah Potter briefly, but that was more like your coach kind of doesn't like you as much as him being in foul trouble.
Well, they only committed six fouls.
Yeah, I mean, this is a game that was very clean in terms of, you know, how it went start to finish. Also, saying it was 77-54 really understates the way this one was going, because I love the KenPom quarters breakdown. The last 10 minutes of this game, Wisconsin outscored Michigan 25-8. And that, you know, Michigan puts in Zeb Jackson after the under eight timeout. Actually, I guess not. I guess they only played him in garbage time. But they start fooling around with some different lineups towards the end of this game. And then, you know, take their foot off the gas completely towards the end. And I don't even know where to start. I wrote obviously a lot about the defensive performance in this game. It was as good as it gets on that end for Michigan, both showing just an absurd variety of things they can do on defense, and also just a demoralizing ability to shut you down straight up. They just attacked Nate Reavers to the point where he was off the floor pretty much immediately, because him being out there at the four was not at all sustainable, and then kept attacking him when he was back in at the five, and he had a rough go of it. You know, Wisconsin tries to use their size advantage in the backcourt right off the bat with the Brad Davison post up on Mike Smith, and the Davison becomes the first dude to almost shatter the backboard with a shot by the Badgers on the night. I mean, it's just an obscenely good all around performance from Michigan, which is also in stark contrast to the Minnesota game, on fire from three in this game. Not that they really need it. They only take 16 3-pointers, but I mean, they just had everything going in this one in a way that was kind of the complete opposite of the game we just saw.
Yeah, Reavers, they dominated him so much, he didn't start in the next game. Like, Michigan pretty much exposed.
That was a long time coming.
Yeah, it is odd because Reavers was able to coexist with Hap pretty well. And it just, for whatever reason, the two outside stretch fives can't play together when the...
Well, Reavers and Potter are kind of the same guy, except Potter's better at it. And Hap was this whole offensive hub that you could run from pretty much anywhere. And I think that makes a big difference. You know, having a playmaking big alongside of him instead of another guy who's just sort of looking for the same pick and pop offense. It doesn't do as much for your spacing as five out makes it sound.
Well, and so you talked about the defense in this game, and I think the best way to summarize it is the last 49 seconds of the first half, which made like the highlight reel we use a lot, which never happens. Like, it's never like, do you want to watch a minute of awesome defense? That's never the highlight.
Matthew Loves Ball is really Matthew Loves Buckets. and he should probably change his YouTube name to that, because it's just buckets. It is really just the ball.
Well, he did include this incredibly awesome section of defense.
But that's what it takes. We saw what it takes. It is like the best minute of basketball that Michigan has played on defense that I can remember. I mean, just an obscene sequence of it almost feeling mean that Wisconsin kept getting the ball back off of, you know, them getting the ball stripped off of the Michigan out of bounds or rebounds hitting off Michigan players. It was like, yeah, you know, it'd almost be nicer if they just gave Michigan the ball back. Like, yeah. just don't put them through this. And for them to not be able to get off a shot because of the way that drives were just getting absolutely shut off, even by guys like Austin Davis and Mike Smith in this game. I mean, you just saw what a total team defensive performance can really do to raise the profile of each individual defender too, because the way that everybody was in position and on point speaks a lot, especially when they're doing stuff like playing a matchup zone that, as I'm looking into it more, is straight out of some like Temple John Chaney stuff, which is not easy to use as your primary defense, let alone as your curveball. It's just crazy to watch. I mean, in that game, it's another reason that I'm more willing to throw out the Minnesota performance, because this game with the team at full strength was so dang good that it's hard to tamp down the excitement about this team, even with a stinker that, you know, I mean, every team plays a bad one at some point.
The one thing that popped, I mean, other than Michigan just like Livers playing one of his best games on defense or anything, but Mike Smith's defense is something we've been talking about for a while, and through the course of the season, it was, you know, it was a big question at the beginning of the year, and he was getting blown by like Oakland dudes, and then all of a sudden, like they could not drive on him at all. You know, we talked a little bit about the you know, Brad Davison trying on him too, but he got matched on Trice as well, and he stayed in front of him. And like, you know, Trice isn't the most athletic guy, but him breaking down the defense means getting in the lane, and like that level of Mike Smith. I think it was on your podcast, Ace, you guys asked whether you would rather have him or X. And I had to pause the podcast and think about it for a while. I'm not sure I still even have an answer.
I gotta stick with X here, just because
he ruins your spacing on this offense. It's a non-starter for me, to be honest. even after this last game, this, you know, Smith being pretty turnover prone, but and not scoring, but
I just don't know what X's assist rate would have been playing next to Hunter Dickinson. 70.
But you're limiting what this, I mean, you know, you're taking away the diversity of this offense, which is a large part of what makes it successful, and you can't play him off the ball. And Michigan's defense, there's only so much better it can get.
Yeah, maybe.
So the marginal improvement you get from having Simpson out there, I think, does not at all offset the fact that he is, let's be honest, a negative on offense, even with his tremendous ability to pass the ball. Those were the worst offenses B-line ever had at Michigan. So I love X, but this team is well constructed, and I would not change out the pieces of it. I would maybe add a piece on the bench, but I would not change the pieces of what's looking like a potential Final Four team.
Yep. And one of the things that stuck out to me just from my tactical point of view in this game was, you know, Reavers could only play 3 minutes next to Potter because Michigan went right at him with that circle cut where he just can't stick with Livers. And that was right after Livers blocked his attempted post up. So it's like, okay, which way is this mismatch going? And it was immediately clear that Reavers could not play at the same time as Potter in this game.
Yeah, it was determined. Yeah, after pretty much two possessions, and it was something that was clearly drawn up. For, I mean, that play was something that they clearly had ready from the beginning, assuming that Wisconsin was going to come out with their same starting lineup and going, all right, we're going to make Reavers run through basically three screens and then turn a corner against Isaiah Livers, who's just significantly more athletic than him. And with the off-ball motion, you also had Wagner popping out to the perimeter in a way that really prevented anyone from helping unless you wanted to leave Hunter Dickinson alone in the paint. So there was just no chance of Wisconsin stopping that play. And, you know, after a couple of early shots from Trice, one where Eli Brooks kind of uncharacteristically gets hung up on a screen, and another where Mike Smith doesn't hang with him on a pull-up, Brooks just shuts him down. Brooks is in his pocket the whole game. So I mean, Michigan's able to mostly just keep Brooks on Trice, have Smith play Davison. And actually the drive that I remember Smith shutting down the most was him walling off Jonathan Davis, who's 6'5", and a skinny 6'5", but still 6'5". And Smith kind of looks initially beat, but then walls up and essentially just bodies him under the basket to the point that Davis barely touches rim with this brick because he's just trying to get it up on the backboard.
Yeah, I thought I was kind of waiting for the whistle on that one, but it didn't come.
it was close, but you know, no whistle, no foul.
And the other thing that kind of pops out from the box score in this game is Franz Wagner finally got some box score respect for his disruption with 4 steals and a block. He also turned in 2 steals and a block against Minnesota, so he's cracked the national steal leaderboard, and he's a top 250 in block right now. So, you know, he's not driving the offense. He's not creating a ton of shots for himself or others, but, you know, as a, as a defensive disruptor, there's probably a couple guys on Baylor who might be better. But other than that, I struggle to conceive of the concept.
Yeah. I haven't watched Baylor enough to speak to Wagner being the best, you know, or like the most disruptive, at least individual defender in the country. But in the Big Ten, I don't think it's a question at this point. And I mean, he's quickly getting the attention of NBA scouts, and it's unfortunately, I'm sorry. And it's not because, I mean, they like his upside on offense, but what is really standing out is the versatility and disruptiveness he's showing on defense. And just he has an uncanny ability to get his hands on the ball.
Is he the defensive player of the year in the league? So
if far, I had a vote, yes.
I mean, Michigan's conference only defense is 5 points better than Wisconsin, who's number 2. And it's largely because their effective field goal defense is awesome, but also they block a ton of shots and, you know, they don't create a lot of turnovers, but the ones that they do are frequently coming from Franz.
Yeah. And if you look at the on off numbers, this does include a little bit of garbage time, so you have to account for that. But when Franz is on the court, Michigan's field goal percentage or 2-point percentage allowed is 39.5. When he's off, it's 45. So he's the individual defender who has the most kind of, if you just go 1-for-1 and there's not an obvious, you know, obvious downgrade in the way that it is if you take Brooks off and put Jackson in. Both in terms of the eye test and the statistics, he's the most impactful defender on, you know, what's still okay. It's now dropped to the 3rd best 2-point defense in the country, but heading into their worst performance of the year was the best 2-point defense in the country. Also by like pretty much any advanced defensive metric you look at. I've been looking at Evan Maya's site recently, and he has a lot of interesting rate stats and or not rate stats, but performance stats that turn things into a cumulative impact rating and divides between offensive and defensive. And Wagner's number 2 in the league in defensive impact rating, and he's 0.1 points behind Kofi Coburn. And I think a lot of that is because of the drop off from Coburn to
Georgie.
Whereas with Wagner, when he comes off the floor, you've got Shondi Brown to put in there.
Yeah, Jamari Wheeler in his gigantic sheriff's badge on his is the only other guy that like is making that much of an impact on defense, and that's all Jamari Wheeler does. And one of the other things that Franz has actually been really improving this year, I think, is defensive boards. And I wonder if that's just because Michigan forces so many of those bad twos that kind of plink off the rim or...
No, I don't think it has to do with that as much as he's in much better position and also is very good at grabbing out of area rebounds because he's so long.
Right. Yeah.
He's burly. So the other thing you have to keep in mind with Franz is he's a year younger than Hunter Dickinson. Like he came to Michigan like as a full-on Karis, right? So, you know, he's still improving rapidly, and I still think that there's some chance that he comes back next year because he is a Wagner, and I would greatly enjoy that.
That would be very fun because right now he's already kind of tough to find statistical comparisons for, and fully unleashed version of that would be pretty wild.
Yeah, clear up the acne before you go to the NBA.
I don't think his brother ever did that, so nope. I'm on board. Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, and take a look around the league.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
approximately $100,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
This is a special message from our friends at the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown. All of our best to the MGO Blog family, and a special thanks to the medical community, healthcare workers, emergency personnel, and all essential workers that are keeping our world going. We miss you all. Hope everyone is staying safe, healthy, and home.
Win or lose this season, stop in to Information Entropy and make sure that you have a good time on game day. First-time customers can light up a free pre-roll and enjoy the quality cannabis products that this shop has to offer. Located 2 miles away from the Big House and accessible to ages 21 plus, find Information Entropy at 1115 Broadway, across from the Kellogg Eye Center off Plymouth Road. They don't want to hear the words go green over there, but they are happy to help you smoke it. Check them out at Information Entropy.
...2021 is finally here, and there's no better way to celebrate the new year than with some new gear. Our local friends at Underground Printing have all your custom apparel needs covered, whether it's breathable polos with your logo or new fleece jackets for your group. UGP works with customers big and small. Choose from their extensive catalog with options for every budget, including premium brands like Nike, Carhartt, Yeti, The North Face, and more. Underground Printing has 3 convenient Ann Arbor locations, or check them out at undergroundprinting.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to...
The University of Michigan was the place we all came together. It's where we pursued our curiosities and where we rallied around things that really mattered. The Alumni Association has now made it possible for you to reconnect with your fellow Wolverines around endless topics within alumni online communities. It's where you can join in the discussion or start your own on any subject from your career, identity, hobbies, or interests. Go to umalumni.com/communities and keep the conversation going.
So a little bit of a light week around the league as Michigan State and Nebraska are on pause, but some interesting things cropped up. We just saw Iowa complete a demolition of Northwestern, but because Northwestern was shooting out of their mind in the first half. And even as, you know, they're keeping it close through the first 20 minutes, you're like, this is only going one way, because eventually Northwestern is going to cool off and Iowa is not.
Yeah, they got into a shooting contest with Iowa, and like you said, that's really only going to go one way. Northwestern they're relying a lot on Boo Booey creating a ton, and he's been on a really rough stretch. Got caught fire briefly in the first half, and then otherwise did not hit a shot. So you get a pretty good game from Pete Nance, and otherwise not a whole lot for them. as they ended up 9 for 33 from three. They just stopped hitting him in the second half. And even though Iowa gave them a green light to the basket, it did not matter because Iowa hits 10 threes and then goes 70% from two. Don't get into a track meet with Iowa if you're Northwestern. It's a real bad.
How do you not get it? I mean, both teams played a 3-2 zone for big chunks of this game. So,
Iowa is always going to be like the way to do it is you have to just run your ass off. And Northwestern was not great at doing that necessarily. There were still plays where Garz is beating them down the floor, getting early offense, they're getting cross masters. And then I thought they just did a pretty poor job in the half court of not committing to a strategy with Luka Garza of either stopping him or letting him cook and taking away the three-pointer. They kind of just got caught in between a lot, and that's a bad place to be. It's a real bad place to be.
Yep. So Iowa, you know, at times this year, we've been looking at them and been kind of like, well, I don't know, that defense is going to be an anchor, but they are the number one offense in the country in a year where Gonzaga is doing this. Their only losses are to Gonzaga and that Minnesota game we referenced earlier where Brandon Johnson had an out-of-body experience. So I think they're like the Stauskas team where their defense is extremely suspect and it just doesn't matter, especially because the season-long offense numbers do not take into account the fact that Jordan Bohannon has been absolutely on fire, and there was a reason that he might have had some issues kind of easing into the season. So he's shooting 52% on 50 Big Ten threes, which is, do you know what his O rating is in Big Ten play?
200.
I'm guessing it's 140-ish.
151.
Good Lord. I wasn't looking at their page. Because I was looking at the Big Ten conference page on KenPom, and I've been really impressed by how far ahead Michigan is ahead of the field in conference only defensive efficiency. So they're at 93.8 and the next closest is at 99.1. So you got a solid 5-point plus clearance there. I was scoring 120.3 points per 100 possessions, and the next best offense is at 112.8. So they're clear by a solid 7 points there. Over Illinois. That's
kind
wild.
Of upset that we don't actually get two games against them, because that would be, for winning the conference purposes, having a one-off at Chrysler is excellent. But I just kind of want to see those games, you know?
Yeah, and I do understand the desire in a year where the top end of the Big Ten is a bit of a gauntlet to just want to play the gauntlet. Like 2013 was really fun, even though Michigan did not end up winning the Big Ten title. Because you just got to see a lot of really high level basketball night in and night out. And at least we don't have a second game against Nebraska. So
the other kind of Iowa storyline going on right now is Keegan Murray, who's a 6'8 freshman, is really emerging into a quality bench piece for them. So he's shooting 73% from the floor in Big Ten play. He's not shooting it particularly much from 3-point range, but he's displayed he has some. He's 8-19 on the season. He's got good size. You know, he's got a freshman like TO rate, but he's a very active offensive rebounder. Like, think of it as Brandon Johns after Brandon Johns like discovered who he was in some sort of coming of age story. And that's kind of what Keegan Murray feels like.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a sort of similar body.
He's a little skinny.
He's got a frame where you can see that, like how the announcers keep talking about how Wagner has broad shoulders. Like, Keegan Murray is a broad-shouldered dude. Like, he's somebody who's going to eventually be able to walk around at, like, a solid 230 or something like that without looking like Ron Harper Jr. out there or something. He's just off the hoof, looks like a guy who's going to eventually be an NBA prospect. Definitely stands out on that Iowa team. Like, he adds a lot of athleticism and can play some defense and is not a downgrade really for them as a shooter, except in comparison to the guys coming off the floor are mostly hitting at like 50% instead of 35. But yeah. he's more of a threat going to the basket. And if he can settle his game down a little bit, I mean, they're able to kind of deal with his turnovers because they're a very effective offense at avoiding them otherwise. But
he also has crazy defensive peripheral statistics. Mm-hmm. He needs, like, he's not quite at the 40% qualifying threshold on KenPom. If he was, he'd be top 50 in steals, and he's got an 8.5 block rate. So he's contributing in all areas of the box score, and I think he's going to be
except
important.
Assists.
Except, well, okay, fine.
He's a black hole.
He's a black right. hole. That's okay. But like, is like,
but there are some serious Franz Wagner vibes. I think actually with him,
and he's gonna get a lot better, and he's gonna be an important piece of their team late in the year, and then as early as next year, he's gonna be a focal point, depending on who exactly they get back.
Like, one thing that is different for him than with Franz is that he is an overager. He's 20. So we'll see how much upside he has left to explore. Cause some of this just might be that, and you can see it just in terms of his body, he is kind of advanced physically for a freshman, but, I still like him a lot as a player. He's probably popped out as the, I don't know, maybe second best freshman in the conference. It's kind of a weak year for freshmen beyond Hunter Dickinson, but, he's right up there.
Moving on to Purdue, now on a 3-game win streak after a win at Assembly Hall against Indiana and a narrow but fairly comfortable win at home against Penn State, particularly because Trevion Williams got in a lot of foul trouble against Penn State. And when he was on the floor, that was not a close game.
Penn State also hit a bunch of circus shots late to kind of get this one a little bit closer, but yeah, Williams only plays 19 points in this game. I don't have the final plus minus up, but at one point towards the end of the second half, or in the middle of the second half, and this might have gotten worse, they were plus 14 with him on the floor and even with him on the bench. So this was a very close game with when he was sitting, which was about half of it, and when he was out there, this was mostly a blowout in Purdue's direction. Penn State just couldn't really handle him. He scores 13 points, goes 6 for 10, does end up as the target of Hack Trevion down the stretch, only goes 1 for 6 from the line. That is a weakness for Purdue at the end of games because they need him on the floor to score. He is a shooting about 50% from the line this year and obviously did not do great under pressure at the end of this one, but he still had such a massive impact that if, say, Matt Painter hadn't necessarily gone to auto bench quite to such a heavy extent that they don't really need him to hit free throws down the stretch in this one, I think it'd be fair to say that. And it was interesting hearing John Beilein on the call for the Big Ten Network in this one, and unfortunately him 100% backing up Painter's decision to keep Williams on the bench for more than half of this game.
I mean, what?
As Williams finishes, by the way, with 3 fouls.
What did you? I mean, you could expect nothing less from the king of auto bench.
Oh, absolutely. And like him and Painter are friends. Like there was no way that this was going to be anything but entirely praised by John Beilein. Unfortunately, Williams does one of these fouls is of the completely silly variety. He commits it 3 feet off the baseline in the backcourt. They kept calling it a 94-foot foul. That was fair. It was bad. If you're Purdue, your best path to winning games is to just let Trevion Williams foul out every time.
Yes.
And because ED can be effective against certain guys and had some success, but Penn State is really undersized up front, not very effective in the post. So Purdue able to get away with that in this game, although it got closer than it did. Needed to be, and Trevion Williams is very good at everything except free throws and maybe kind of defense a little bit.
Yeah, and Purdue wins this game a lot like they won the Michigan State game. They go 6 of 32 from three. That's a cool 19%. So of course in the Indiana game they hit 11 of 17.
The one that very enjoyably happens at Assembly Hall. Yeah, and this was also another huge game for Trevion Williams. He drops 22 points, 9 for 15 from 2, 4 for 9 from the free throw line. That is really a problem. But all-around contributions for Purdue were nice. and Indiana is Trace Jackson Davis or death. Trace Jackson Davis has kind of a Travion Williams game, 9-for-16 from 2, 7-for-14 from the line. Indiana cannot hit a 3 to save their lives, and that is the difference in this one.
Yeah, and you know, just watch these games back to back, and the shots look about the same from Purdue. Like, the quality is not changing, just the frequency with which they go down. And makes me feel a little bit better about the Minnesota game, because it's kind of like, you know, there's all these teams playing back to backs this season, and frequently what you'll see is you'll see like this team won by 30 and then lost the subsequent night. So even in a single game, there's a lot of randomness poking around. So
you cannot scout this conference based on like catching one or two games a week, because if you do, you're going to have some very extreme opinions.
So Purdue's on a bit of an upswing. Also on an upswing is Ohio State. That's despite losing their starting point guard and their backup point guard. So they're really just kind of throwing out whoever right now. But they get a 6-point win over Illinois with a lovely closing sequence. They beat Northwestern by 10. And now they're 5-3 in the conference. They're top 20 in KenPom. And Chris Holtmann has once again made some chicken salad.
Yeah. So you mentioned the closing sequence in the Illinois game. Just to get it out there. This is referencing a KenPom tweet, because this stretched well into the Michigan-Minnesota game. And I had been watching Ohio State-Illinois and expected it to be over much earlier than it was. But the final minute of the game took 17 minutes, which is disgusting.
unless Tom Izzo is eating his liver, there's no reason for a basketball game to go that long.
There's still no reason.
Disgusting. EJ Liddell goes 4-of-7 from 3 in this game, which was more threes than he had made the season to date. And a couple of those were like nasty step backs that EJ Liddell should not be shooting. So we were talking about, you know, 3-point luck influencing games a lot. And that was a major factor, because Ohio State started out this game absolutely on fire and they finish 11-of-21. You know, some of those come from Arns, and the question about Justin Arns is always like, why did you let him get 5 threes up? But, you know, I think the biggest development for Ohio State is that Seth Towns, for almost the first time this season, finally got a reasonable amount of playing time. He gets 15 minutes, puts up 11 points efficiently, has a steal, a couple rebounds. And, you know, they were going to rely on Seth Towns to be a major piece of their team, but he hasn't been able to play for much of the year because he was injured. And when he did come back, it was still like he wasn't completely ready to go. And if he's able to chip in 15, 20 minutes going forward, I think that's going to offset a lot of the point guard issues. Not because he's a point guard, just because he's a good player.
Yeah, there was that. And there was also, I thought Justice Suing, even though he did not have a particularly strong stat line, played a really good game in this one. He does have 4 assists. He was generally their lead ball handler. He does turn it over 5 times. I mean, he is not a natural point guard, but was able to drive a lot of play, and pretty much everyone else except Dwayne Washington had a really efficient game. So I thought he was doing a good job of running that offense. And then on the other end, the big story for Illinois recently has been that Iodesumu can be shut down by good, bigger defensive guards. And Suing was often the guy matched up against Desumu. And Desumu had some trouble. Like, that plays a decent overall game, but once again needs like a high number of possessions to get to 22 points. And Suing did a great job against him down the stretch. And it was to the point where I thought Illinois really needed to do a better job of getting the ball to Kofi Coburn, because
he
does not miss a shot from the field in this game.
No, but he only gets 7 attempts and he has 6 offensive rebounds. So what, 3 or 4 of those are probably putbacks. Mm-hmm. They were absolutely not able to get him the ball on the post against, you know, a team that their post top out at 6'8".
Yeah. And it's not like they aren't trying. So I mean, I've been very skeptical of EJ Liddell's kind of impact numbers, on-off numbers, because a lot's pointing to him being a really excellent defensive big man, even though he is 6'7", 240. But I mean, when you get the ball in against him, obviously to his 7-footer, he's in trouble. Although I don't think all of Coburn's production came individually against Liddell. You've also got Kyle Young out there. They had Zed Key in there at times, and I know they attacked that at least once. For Liddell to even be able to, you know, dissuade entry passes like he did is pretty impressive, and something that Michigan is probably going to want to take a pretty close look at before they play Ohio State, just to, you know, see how they need to get the ball into the, you know, try to create angles for entries to Hunter Dickinson.
Yeah. And I mean, Ohio State has no block rate this season at all, but they're still managing to be a top 100 team defending two pointers. They're third in conference. I guess they have a somewhat okay block rate, but none of that is really coming from the center position.
And they only had one in this game, and it was by Musa Jallo.
So, yeah. And, you know, people are kind of talking about Illinois as a disappointment. I mean, I guess they're 5-3 in conference. You do have to kind of take into account that their losses are by 3 to Missouri, by 3 to Rutgers, by 3 to Maryland, and this 6-point game to Ohio State, which is actually a little bit less close than that. But, you know, they're pretty close to being, you know, a 2-loss team. I don't know, horseshoes and hand grenades and all that, but, you know.
Yeah, and I think also the concern is that they haven't played one of the elite teams in the conference yet, and they already have 3 losses hung on them, as well as it does seem like there's a bit of a blueprint out there now to stop them in terms of ways to defend Sumu. And then just, I don't know, kind of hoping that they don't. I mean, Michigan will have a better ability to just match up straight up, but the lack of getting the ball to Coburn was had to be a huge point of frustration for Illinois fans during that game.
Yeah, so, I mean, he has 41% usage against Minnesota, and then Rutgers is able to kind of keep him under wraps a little bit. 25% usage against Penn State, 29 against Indiana, and then he hasn't gotten over 22 in the past 4 games. And this is a guy who's shooting 74% from the floor. And that usage includes a bunch of offensive rebounds that he's going up with, right? So, like, their ability to get him post-ups is really lacking.
Yeah. I mean, at the same time, defense was definitely more the problem for them in this game. They scored 81 points in 71 possessions, but it did seem like, given the matchup, I thought Ohio State matched up relatively well with them in the backcourt, because if you're going to have a game where you don't really have a true point guard going against Sumu, who's a 6'5 point guard, and Frazier, who doesn't really attack much at all off the ball, is a nice matchup to have. But I assumed Coburn was going to just feast on them, and he sort of did, but, you know, not to the extent that I expected. And Liddell was able to more than offset it with his offensive production, which I wasn't as sure he was going to be able to do. But I don't know if that whole going 11 for 21 on threes with Liddell hitting 4 of them is the most sustainable thing. Although Illinois didn't do a great job of keeping track of Justin Ahrens, and that's something it's the only job you have with that right. guy.
Yeah.
Speaking of Coburn, I mean, just the fact that he can't even get the ball is one thing, but we've seen enough now, I think, that the 54% free throw percentage this year might be real. Like, last year he was shooting 67%, and you're like, okay, well, can't really foul that guy, but, you know, that's holding up, so, I mean, you can kind of hack at that guy too now.
I remember when we played Illinois last year, and they're talking about this guy who's from, like, Jamaica, who hadn't picked up a basketball until 2 years ago, and he's 7 feet tall and almost 300 pounds, and he goes to the line and he's hitting like 70%. And you're like, that's not fair. this is ridiculous. But he has been scuffling sort of in the same way that Trevion Williams has. And that kind of makes him an end game issue.
Yeah. Especially since it seems like it might now be worming its way into his head a little bit, in a way that, you know, maybe before you could kind of write it off to, you know, just a slow start to the season, but it's now dragged down his career free throw percentage to 62.
Yeah.
And if that's really the level of where it's at, then that can really change in a major way how you defend that guy.
Well, I mean, speaking of getting into his head, it just seems like Illinois has to have Brett Underwood scream at them a lot more than other. This is definitely a feelings ball take, but I turn on an Illinois game and, like, they're down by 10 points and Underwood is like, don't you respect your families? And that happens to all basketball teams, but it just kind of feels like they kind of waver in and out of games with more frequency than other teams. I don't know. This is feelings ball, as I mentioned.
Yeah, but I do think it's pretty accurate with Illinois that they are a team that seems to have trouble locking in sometimes. And I mean, we've seen it was the Maryland game too, you know, this past week where Georgi Bishanasvili comes off the floor and looks just absolutely distraught at his own play. And he at least bounces back and has a better performance in this one, but this was also a much better matchup for him. Especially when Ohio State is playing Liddell and Young on the court at the same time, you can at least have him out there on Kyle Young and kind of have both guys just sort of do the Spider-Man point. It just kind of feels like there's a little bit something off with this team in a way that, you know, we didn't mention this in the Minnesota section of the Michigan game, but I did think it was notable that, like, even when Michigan is clearly totally out of this game, losing it, has the walk-ons in the game, that you can hear them chanting defense from the bench. You know, and those are like, even if it's kind of, you know, like a corny thing to do, the fact that they're willing to do it speaks to like how much that team has bought into what their coach wants them to do. And I think Brad Underwood would have really had to rip into his guys before they'd be chanting defense at the end of games right now.
Yeah. One other game of note, Wisconsin grinds one out against Rutgers 60-54. Neither team gets to a point per possession. Wisconsin hits 24% from three. Rutgers hits 11%. Just kind of a slobber knocker of a game that I think was inevitable when these two teams went up against each other. Just because they are terrible matchups for each other's offenses.
Yeah. Also, Wisconsin was coming off of really short rest on this one, or relatively short rest. So yeah, you got a quick turnaround on one end, traveling to the rack, Wisconsin changes their starting lineup, as Seth mentioned earlier. You know, they just finally make the move to pull Nate Reavers out, not mess around with having two bigs who do the same thing on the floor at the same time, and stick Tyler Wall in the starting lineup. And I think the big takeaway from this game is that Reavers only plays 17 minutes. So what I'd pointed out heading into the Wisconsin game, where it's Greg Gard had favored Reavers over Potter as the sole center on the floor when there was only one center, even though Potter had been more effective statistically and they'd been a better team with him out there. That seems to be shifting over the last couple games.
Just watching Reavers play right now.
Yeah, I mean, he looks openly frustrated. It wasn't just the Michigan game. He had a rough game against Rutgers. He goes 1-for-5 from the floor, only has one block. Like, he's not...
Zero rebounds.
Yeah, zero. Yeah, I mean, he's away from the rim. He is not protecting it as much. Like, he's going for blocks, but he's not getting them nearly as much as he did before. His block rate in Big Ten play is 2%, which would make him, like, fourth or fifth among Michigan starters. He's really scuffling right now, and it changes a lot of what Wisconsin can do, because a lot of their strength is having, you know, not a lot of drop off no matter who's in there at center. And now all of a sudden there's a big drop off.
Yeah. And so you go into the season thinking that you can play those two guys next to each other. They're both going to be 20% plus usage guys. And now, I mean, you're inevitably putting a 10% usage guy on the floor, which ups the pressure on everybody else. And nobody on this team is really like a true 30% usage. I can be an alpha dog guy. Trice comes the closest. But
Trice can do it a little bit.
A little bit.
It's a lot to put on him, especially when there's nobody else who can do it really.
Yeah. So I think Wisconsin is kind of topping out in the kind of upper end of the mid range, and Rutgers currently 3-5 in conference, coming off a brutal stretch, but three of those four losses in a row were at home. So the kind of rack magic, which was inevitably going to go away because there's nobody actually in the stands this year, but that's been kind of thoroughly punctured. They do get kind of a break now, Rutgers. They don't have a top 25 opponent until Minnesota 4 games from now. So if they're going to kind of find their footing, this would be a good time.
Yeah, they also just had almost a week off to heal up after the Wisconsin game, and they need it maybe more than any other Big Ten team. Ron Harper missed a game during this losing streak. I think it was an ankle. He didn't look great and back to full strength in that Wisconsin game. Miles Johnson, they can't figure out whether they want him starting or not. Cliff Omarui just got back in the lineup and now might have taken that starting center job, or might take it back. He played 15 minutes against Wisconsin. But that was his first game back on the court. They're going through, Geo Baker's been in and out. They need a break more than anybody. And it's a little hard to get a read on this team just because of how little they've played together full strength. But it does seem like they're not the even close to contender that they kind of looked like in the beginning of the season.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break, come back, talk some hockey and women's hoops.
This is Matt Demarest, the owner of Homesure Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homesure Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homesurelending.com. That's HOMESURE lending.com/MGOBlog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present The Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team. Yeah!
If you get in foul trouble in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man on your bench. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
The University of Michigan was the place we all came together. It's where we pursued our curiosities and where we rallied around things that really mattered. The Alumni Association has now made it possible for you to reconnect with your fellow Wolverines around endless topics within Alumni Online communities. It's where you can join in the discussion or start your own on any subject from your career, identity, hobbies, or interests. Go to umalumni.com/communities and keep the conversation going.
Seth, I need takes hotter than Elaine. What I meant to say was EJ Liddell taking step back 30 footers.
You went from hot take guy to like very old man sitting on his Georgia porch.
Well, sometimes, you know, you just got to take it where the wave takes you, man. Now I sound like Bill Walton. Seth, give me your hottest take.
Michigan should join the SEC so we can continue to vicariously live off of Alabama's success.
Okay, that's good. Damn.
Because that felt great.
It also hurts. But
yeah, it's good. We should be in the other division, though, I would think.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, we got a natural rival with Florida already.
Yeah. Vandy?
Yeah.
Our coffee is fancier, you son of a bitch.
We already know a bunch of people from Tennessee. Like, that'd be a good rivalry.
Do we?
Holly, there's one. I personally know a few people from
That's not a good reason to change conferences. I personally know some people in a state. We could go to Guam. I know someone in Guam. He's not in Guam anymore. I think he's in Toronto. Ace, I need your hottest take.
You always set me up for these so well. Iowa should stop hitting so many threes. I can't even do the hot take voice. It's devastating to look at their three-point percentage right now. It sucks. It's 42% in Big Ten play. What the hell? Stop it. Don't like it.
All right. I have a related hot take, which is Fred McCaffrey is the coach of the year in the Big Ten. And I feel like he might not get it because people expected Iowa to be very good. But if you just look at the history of Iowa basketball on KenPom, the number of times they have had a top 10 team is zero. This is the best Iowa basketball team since at least 1997. And he's done it by putting together a completely bizarre grouping of players who are just at the line where they got to stay in college. Like, he is towing that line better than anyone else, and their defense kind of sucks.
But it's right in the middle of the pack of the Big Ten.
It is. Not adjusted for schedule strength, but whatever. But, like,
the best offense they faced is record.
Like the incredible anti-B-line.
It is possible this goes to, like, Patino or Holtman or Greg Gard or something, and it should be a runaway.
God, if it goes to Patino, it'd be criminal. I can see the argument for Holtman, but Yeah, I think it has to go to either. I mean, I could see the argument for Juwan Howard as well, but I don't want to be a huge homer.
Pikel?
No, nah, I mean, there's 3-5.
You turned Jacob Young into a good player.
Okay, he can get the disaster factory escape button from us, but.
Yeah, it's not the same as being the best coach, unfortunately. Yeah, Underwood's not really in contention. Guard, I don't think is really in contention. Painter's not in contention.
I mean, Juwan is probably the best guy, like the most likely other guy, and it should be Fran, because you know Michigan has had a lot of really good teams in the past few years. They have this kind of level of program, and Iowa has never been able to do this in the KenPom era.
Well, I just wanted, like, if it keeps rolling as it does right now, I absolutely agree with you. If Iowa all of a sudden faces, you know, an offense in the top half of the Big Ten, and that defense maybe turns out to be a bit of a mirage and drops back to where Iowa's normal standard is, then the job that Juwan Howard has done on both sides of the ball might merit a Coach of the Year award more than somebody who has totally juiced up one side and once again put a pretty crappy product out on the other end of the floor. Okay, but that depends on how this season goes. As it stands right now, I think he's your leader.
Okay, the amount of juice we're talking about here is that Iowa's adjusted offensive efficiency is 9 points better than Michigan, who is ninth in the country. So
yeah, it's a lot of juice. But then if you also look at like the gap in Michigan and Iowa's adjusted defensive efficiencies, it's 6 points the other way.
I know.
So you get pretty close there. And that gap opened up. You know, we're talking about this coming off of Michigan's worst game of the year by a wide margin.
That's true. But it's just, Iowa has literally never been this good. this is the best they have ever been.
But we predicted they've been, like, we predicted this team so many years going into, so many years that we stopped predicting it.
There's no we here. This is all me.
Yeah, and also I don't want to be pinned with any Iowa believer status here.
Right.
So let's keep these basketball opinions separate.
Fair enough.
I am the Fran Stan on staff, and that's working out very well for me.
Yeah, that is working right now. I am, and I do think this Iowa team is best equipped to actually win the Big Ten championship, and the team that is most likely to do it right now. But I really am curious about how they'll look like when they're in closer games against teams that can actually shoot.
Yeah, we'll see. All right,
Oh, no, sorry. I had a question before we go into that. Who's the worst coach this year?
Izzo?
Is it Tom Izzo?
I mean, it's kind of always Archie Miller, but maybe Tom Izzo.
Yeah, it's Archie Miller.
All right. If you'd like
Izzo gets crappy roster construction of the year, though.
If you'd like us to ever finish this segment, maybe you should stop interrupting me, guys.
Sorry.
It's all right. If you'd like us to continue doing this extremely silly segment, get yourself some Fuego Bucks. They'll send you 3 hot sauces every month, chosen for flavor, not merely heat. Go to fuegobucks.com/mgoblog for $10 off your first month's order. All right. So Michigan hockey gets an important sweep over Ohio State. Ohio State is not one of the better teams in the conference this year. They don't really have a whole lot of talent. I do like the fact that their leading scorer is a guy named Tree Lore, and that sounds like an ent. It's just the most.
Did you say Tree Lord?
Tree Lore with an E at the end.
Okay, that works too.
And apparently he told BTN that he has a family situation where he's lived in Norway and Sweden and Toronto for portions of his life. So he told BTN that he speaks Swedish with his mom and Norwegian with his brother and Canadian with his father. And I was like, yep, perfect match at Ohio State. Good job.
Whoops.
But both of these, Michigan wins 4-2 on Friday night. They're up 1-0 in the third period. They're out shooting Ohio State like 23-14. And one, you get this kind of cheap power play for Ohio State that they score on by having a random deflection in front of the net. And then there is an offsides review and the play is clearly offsides by a foot or more.
This was ridiculous.
And the explanation that Mel Pearson got was that they can't, even if there is an offsides, if you play the puck in your own zone as the defending team and then they score after that, they don't take the goal back.
So you need to just like psychically derive that this play is going to come back on an offsides review before you decide to defend.
Well, there's some justification for that. Cause like, I don't think that there should be offsides reviews at all. In fact, I don't think there should be offsides period, but if you're going to have offsides, like messing up a zone entry is not a big enough factor to slow the game down the way it does. But so they have this goal. It looks a mile offsides, and then they point to the dot, and it's 1-1. And you're just remembering last week against Michigan State, right, where, you know, they take the lead with 5 minutes to go. They manage to blow that game despite dominating Michigan State all weekend. They have dominated Ohio State in this game in terms of zone possession, chances, whatever you want. And you're just like, oh, God, here we go again. And then they rip off 2 goals. They get another empty netter. Ohio State scores on a power play with like 3 seconds left. So whatever. And you get your good solid win on Friday. And then on Saturday, they just blow the doors off. It's 5-0. It deserves.
Chase the goalie.
Yeah, they chase the goalie. It deserves to be 5-0. Like Ohio State just doesn't look like they belong on the same ice as this Michigan team. They can't skate with them. They can't prevent them from getting a ton of good scoring opportunities. You know, Beecher looks out of his mind good. Cam York's really coming on. The one thing that kind of jumps out from the weekend as a downer is the fact that their power play just isn't clicking like it was early in the season. They do get a couple of goals on Saturday, but just they're not having as much zone time. They're having some issues gaining the zone, and they're also just not finding the kind of chances they were earlier in the season. But overall, needed this sweep, and you kind of needed this sweep to feel like it did, because now you can go into the next weekend and okay, we are one of the better teams in this league. We're fine. We're at 500 in conference play, and now is where we hit the go button. So important weekend for Michigan, and a good result. How'd the women's basketball team do?
They did great. They played two of the worst teams in the Big Ten, which will help with that. So first off, they just kind of blew the doors off Illinois. Naz Hillman goes for 24 and 13. It's just sort of a pretty straightforward Michigan is much better than this team game, getting most of their work done inside the arc, dominating the glass, that sort of thing. Wisconsin was seemingly very, very desperate to avoid that when they matched up. So they really double teamed the hell out of Naz Hillman, to the point where she only gets up six shots. But she pulls down 15 rebounds and gets seven assists against only one turnover because they are doubling so hard that the perimeter is just wide the hell open. So Michigan goes 9 for 24 from three and wins by 29 because Wisconsin never once deviates from this strategy. And also Michigan's defense is suffocating. Their leading scorer only gets a point. So, nice back-to-back wins against two bottom-tier Big Ten teams. Mostly notable for Michigan getting a lot of secondary scoring. Maddie Nolan was a scorching 5 for 11 on three against Wisconsin, and even though that was mostly just shooting practice, it's nice to see that number go down. Got 15 points from McKenray Johnson. And with Leah Brown still out because of COVID protocol, they've really needed someone else besides Hillman to score up to step up as an efficient scorer. And they got that this week between Haley Brown in the first game against Illinois and then Nolan and Johnson against Wisconsin.
All right. So what does the immediate future look like for them?
The immediate future is that the Michigan State game is postponed because the COVID problems also extend to Michigan State's women's basketball program. So there is not a game coming up as soon as I would like, but they do have a very tough one at Ohio State, their other rival. And the team, as I mentioned, I think on the last podcast, self-imposed a postseason ban without announcing it. They travel to Columbus on the 21st. So that'll be a tough stretch or a tough game before they have kind of easier stretch leading up to an early February showdown at home against Maryland that will hopefully be it could potentially be a matchup of two undefeated teams in the Big Ten if they keep rolling as they are.
All right. The hockey team has a series at Notre Dame next weekend. Notre Dame was kind of the beginning of the slide in the first half because they played their Notre Dame game, which means they don't take any penalties. They don't get any chances. You don't get any chances. And then some stuff goes into the net somehow, some way. This is an extremely important series for a lot of reasons, but Michigan's second halves of the season under Mel Pearson that have been very good have usually started out or had an early Notre Dame series in which they look extremely good. And sometimes they sweep Notre Dame and sometimes it's a split or whatever. I think one time they actually got swept, but Notre Dame was the number one team in the country and Michigan looked like they belonged on the ice with them. Their goal differential this year is -2. Michigan is +19. So, you know, they just haven't spread out their goals very well, but I think they're a very talented team that should be better than Notre Dame. And they need to take, you know, 3 points out of this weekend, an old fashioned 3 points to continue this momentum. And so there's going to be a lot riding on early first period shots. The good news is that I think because it's at Notre Dame, we get like NBC streaming, which is amazing. Crystal clear.
Not BTN Plus. Might even have the audio for the whole game.
They managed that like, well, they managed about 56 minutes of it last time. So
yeah, I was about to say, like, you know, sometimes getting it right at the beginning of the period doesn't always happen.
I do have my theory on, like, what's going on with Michigan's power play right now. If you remember Mel's first year, like, they got really good at 5-on-5, and then, like, their special teams were terrible for a while, and then they kind of slowly got up to speed. And that was partly just the skill on the ice. But also, like, I think that not playing together for a while, I think that once he got the guys back, like, Mel just wanted to put them, you know, in 5-on-5 situations, make sure, like, that's settled. And they probably just haven't been able to practice together very much because, like, half their power play was at the WJC.
Well, they do have the two units that are pretty co-equal and probably should remain co-equal. It is a thing that could be a factor. I just think that, you know, what they're doing right now is kind of basic. I guess this is reinforcing your point in that they need to do a little bit more. They need to have a little bit more variety once they're set up in the zone. Because especially when Brisson is out there, they are just looking for his one-timer. Mm-hmm. And once you have that, you can have them overplay it and then other stuff opens up. But I haven't seen that yet. All right, guys. We will see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am A. Sandbender, along with Brian Cook and Seth Fisher. I have no idea whether to end this podcast on a happy or a sad note.
Change remaining. Chad Henne battling a bad knee and a bad shoulder and a Michigan State defense. Throwing, got another one complete. This time Arrington, and it's inside the 15-yard line. First down, Wolverines.
Yards.
Henne, pressure coming to the end zone. Touchdown!
What Matthews. What a great throw. What a great throw.
14-yard strike to Matthews, and Michigan's right back in it. Remember, Chad Henne had to limp off on a bad knee, came back in one play later, and now throws his 83rd touchdown pass of his brilliant Michigan career, and he's got his team right back in the thick of this thing.